Welcome to Repro 360's podcast, Making Better Bovine Babies. Proudly sponsored by Vetoquinol Australia, our mission is to help producers, vets and AI technicians accelerate the rate of genetic gain across the Australian cattle industry. I'm Rebecca Arnott, and I recently had the pleasure of spending a fascinating day with Jack Milbank and ET guru Udo Main while they collected Thule embryos from 8 donor cows and then implanted these into a number of recips. All part of a project to relaunch the African Thule breed in Australia, which I should add is said to have the potential of adding an additional $200 million a year to the beef industry. I've known Jack since the 90s when he was a young Zimbabwean causing mischief on the side of the Harare polo fields. Since then, he has grown into a jack of many trades and, dare I say, master of each. He is an Nuffield scholar, and with his scientific background, inquiring mind, tenacity to problem solve and global connections, he is renowned for his visionary thinking and delivering results. While Udo was busy retrieving embryos under the microscope, I had an impromptu opportunity to interview Jack, in between his great deliberations of selecting which embryos would go into the recips. Jack, we're here on Hartwood Farm, just outside Bundaberg, as you embark on a fairly ambitious and unusual breeding project, in that you've essentially relaunched the Thule breed in Australia. Tell us a bit about this project and how it came to fruition.
So the project started back in about 1989 when John Frisch and Chris O'Neill and the CSIRO team went over to Zim to identify the selection of which Thule animals they could bring to Australia. So in the working group, they identified that Thule was a priority one animal and could contribute $160 million a year to the Australian beef industry. And so I suppose the project started way back then, and identification of the best Thule bulls available were made and brought over here. But that, over the subsequent 20 years, resulted in primarily sires being incorporated into much of the North Australian cattle herd as to build up their tropical composites. However, I suppose the funding for the project was finished, and so CSIRO could no longer support it, and MLA were no longer involved in it. And there was a dispersal sale in 2018, I think, and a number of any nucleus herds were sent to the meatworks, and the project came to a conclusion. And so it was up to someone to now, I suppose, take on the breed and commercialize it as a result of all the research and money and millions of dollars spent by CSIRO and MLA to bring in Thules that were perceived to contribute the most so far as maximizing hybrid vigor in the Australian beef industry. So I suppose it's having farmed in Zim with cattle, it was piqued my interest when, having reviewed all the breeds, Thule stood out as what would suit North Australian cattle conditions best. And a lot's happened since then.
You're a Zimbabwean, obviously. You're an agronomist and an Uffield scholar. When I caught up with you a few years ago, you'd recently established the Bagara Brewing Company, and I'm not sure if you really knew one end of a cow from the other. How is it that you're now shaping up as one of Australia's greatest movers and shakers?
I suppose as an applied scientist, we take research that is being done, whether it's in agronomy, whether it's in brewing, whether it's in chemistry, microbiology, or genetics, and it's working out how to apply that research to an industry and whether we're enhancing adoption of those scientific findings or helping, you know, getting that science into reality. So we've done that a number of times with software, with agronomy, with beer, with biology. And so there was just a complementary set of skills with my knowledge of biology, chemistry, agronomy. And as my mate Udo says, the best feeders make the best breeders. So if you've got a really solid understanding of soil biology, soil chemistry, feed nutrition, that's, you know, one of the most important parts to successful breeding. Yeah, and then obviously the wild card is your genetic composition that you then choose to multiply out. So we just saw the unique characteristics of heat tolerance and hybrid vigor and fertility and meat quality from a Thule's perspective, that was a significant contributor to the overall economy that is scalable and has the most to contribute to, you know, one of the world leading beef industries that had been underutilized. All the research had been done, but adoption and deployment was limited. And that's what we're focusing on now, is taking the investment that has been made in research and converting it into outcomes. Putting bulls on the ground, solar-powered bulls to add hybrid vigor and an outcross option to Brahman so that you can introduce that hybrid vigor as an alternative with increased fertility, increased heat and parasite resistance. And, you know, as there's this shift towards regenerative ag and a lower input bull, so that you're limiting your overheads and your inputs so that you have a very efficient feed converter, a very efficient animal at getting to weaning weights quickly and having significantly better fertility as a result of its adaptation to the conditions in which most of Australian beef are produced.
You mentioned a solar-powered bull.
Mm.
Can you explain what a solar-powered bull is? And surely all bulls are solar-powered?
Sure. So if you think of some of the Bos Taurus, the high input that require a lot of grain, a lot of intensive pasture that are unable to fend for themselves in the wild. So Thule's come from the desert. They've learnt to sustain themselves on very little for a very long time and are therefore very low input animals that deliver incredible fertility and resilience to environmental stresses. So whether it's drought, whether it's scarcity of feed, they will forage and browse and make their feed conversion. They'll make the most of anything they can find as a result of 5,000 years growing up in the desert. So by comparison, a bull that requires 5 kgs of grain a day, every day to maintain rib cover, rib fat. So these are low input bulls that deliver time and again under the harshest conditions. And that's sort of where we feel as a regenerative, there's a push towards regenerative ag. We want lower input, self-sustaining animals that are going to perform under any condition.
You've only really been operating for 12 months. And in that time, you've set up Hartwood Farm. You've partnered with a whole range of stakeholders from producers, repro specialists, breed societies, universities. How have you achieved so much in a short space of time?
Again, I don't think it's me achieving anything. It's willingness of people to collaborate, and we'll work with people that want to work with us. So we're incredibly ambitious in what we want to achieve for the Thule breed in Australia. And we were fortunate enough to partner with Accelergen in America, doing a whole animal genome. So we've fully genome sequenced 6 of our reference sires for use globally. You know, we've developed amazing relationships and formed friendships with people that have shared our vision and shared the passion for what Thule's, their uniqueness and the significant contribution that they can make to the beef industry. And it's got to be based on genuine science, integrity of the breed and integrity of the way in which we go about our business, and a belief that quality breeds quality. So there's no point in investing the time, money, energy unless we're going to do it really well. So that means you go to the best universities, the best reproductive specialists, the best drug companies, the best producers, and you put all of those pieces of the puzzle together, and that's what's required to make embryos that we're retrieving semen collected from Zimbabwe by CSIRO, selected of the best bulls, following 5,000 years of their genetic development. Now we've got to put together the drugs, the embryologist, the farm, the feed and nutrition. Everything has got to fall into place in a sort of an amazing synchronicity that it happens on one day when everybody comes together like we are today. But that's as a result of understanding the genetic lines, getting that feedback from the people who actually went to Zimbabwe and made the collections, the other breeders like Tremere, like Oakvale, like Riverview, like Terrawina. All of these people have contributed to understanding where the genetic diversity lies, and we've got a fantastic array of bulls that we're now able to work with. We're just now bringing them into commercial reality over and above a handful of operators that utilized it when it was a research project. Now this is bringing it to life for the remainder, for the whole beef industry in Australia and around the world, so Argentina and America and Mexico. But we've got to look after our own backyard first and make sure we do things really well for Australia first.
So do you have an ultimate vision at this point? Because I hear you talk about not just about Thule's, but Brulies and Droolies and Santoolies and Simoolies and Angoolies and Wagoolies. The list goes on. So sure. What? Where are you thinking?
Sure. So what we've done here is we've bought 8 stud heifers of each breed, all partnered with other breeders who have those. So we've got Drakensbergers, we've got Speckle Park, Wagyu, Limousin, Charolais. So in order for a producer to see with their own eyes the impact that Thule genetics have on maximizing hybrid vigor. People need to see to believe. So I thought the only way to do it is, well, let's buy stud quality heifers, put them across Thule bulls. So in March, we'll be having world firsts of all of these crossbreeds that will give us a significant pool of animals that are now available to tropically adapt, improve their heat tolerance, and elevate their meat quality and fertility across all of those other breeds. So suddenly, instead of a pure Charolais being limited and really struggling in some heat conditions, and instead of relying solely on Brahman, we now have an ability to produce a Thule cross Charolais, which extends the market for those Charolais breeders, because they now have access to use a Thule in their program instead of having Brahman as one of the sole options. So basically, we're just trying to demonstrate to each breed that we want to partner with them and what value Thule's bring to their breed. I really believe that we can have a revolution in what genetics are used and what it can bring productivity-wise to the beef industry.
I'd like to run through what you've had to do on farm to prepare both your donor cows and your recips for the ET program, because you're essentially running two parallel programs, aren't you?
Yep. So collection of all the appropriate drugs and planning out. So Udo Marni from Embryo Life has been fantastic in provision of a very clear and easy to follow, spelt out embryo program, timing, dates, exact things we have to do. So we put Q-mates in early, so to synchronize all the cars. Then we're using some follotropin, which has been critical in enhancing the hyperovulation. And I suppose prior to the commencement of the actual embryo program, all the hard work was, you know, 3 months ago. So ensuring that our selenium, our multimin, and identifying where potential deficiencies may lie. So doing a feed analysis, soil analysis. So we use Novum Life Sciences in Bundaberg as a lab so that they can do the testing. So we can make amendments to our soil, incorporate supplementary feed to ensure our energy, protein, and fiber is in balance, and there's still work to do. You know, we've learned so much through this first program that we'll take on to the second program where we can improve things more. So yeah, there's been a lot in animal preparation, but also coordinating with industry experts, then obviously through COVID and supply issues, which have all been overcome. So it's been incredibly rewarding for a first time around. So we're six donors down so far in the day, and we're up nearly 28 embryos, and so we couldn't be happier with a first round so far with it. You know, we've got more to do this afternoon, and other preparation is sourcing, aggregating all of the Thule genetics into one tank on one farm. These bulls are spread between Mexico, Nicaragua, Argentina, America, Australia. So the fact that we've now got the whole genetic base of Thule's outside of Africa on one farm in one shed, that we've now got industry experts and we're remaking these animals, preserving them so that we can now take this genetic resource forward, is something that's, it's pretty exciting.
I know Udo is very particular about preparing for an assisted breeding program, and I know you incorporate many holistic management principles, as you've touched on, but what would you say are the key factors for success when you're running an ET program?
A good vet crush. Secondly, test selenium and supplement if necessary, long-acting Selevan, multimin, ensuring that you're getting adequate minerals, vitamin B, low stress, being in and knowing your cattle and keeping them calm. So one thing we love about Thule's is their docility and their easy handling. And that's something that, you know, removal of that stress that is common in cattle that have of a dispersive nature versus a collective nature is a big part of the natural preparation to be efficient breeders. So selection of a Thule genetic base, because they are collective grazers, because they usually would have been predated upon by hyena and lion and things, they tend to, and this feeds into the holistic planned grazing, they tend to graze collectively. And so you get a natural regeneration of the soil because they naturally, intensive rotationally graze, as opposed to some of the Bos indicuses will be dispersive grazers. So they spread everywhere. So they more selectively graze, which means you get a gradual degradation of your pasture and your soil carbon over time, as opposed to, you know, defecating, feeding, eating, moving on. It actually builds your soil carbon as a result of having a collective grazer versus a dispersive grazer. And that collectiveness, coupled with the low stress and easy handling because of being handled intensively over 5,000 years, means that the preparation is so much easier for an assisted breeding program because as we saw this morning, the Thule car is sitting in the crush chewing the cud while being flushed. So just having nice, easy handling, low stress animals is no one particular input in preparing, but it's an overall approach and management of your herd leading into the program that they're easy to handle, because obviously they have to go through the yards twice a day for 10 days. You know, you want something that's quick and easy, that there's no hassles.
So that was my next question, just how many times through the yards would each group have to go?
So the donors were quite easy. So we put Q-mates in to synchronize, and then they ate 9 days later. So once we had everything synchronized, it was quite an easy program. With the donors, obviously a little bit more intensive. I mean, that's why I refer to Udo's or Embryo Life's plan each day, because it spells out 6 a.m., 2 p.m., 6 p.m. But it's only a very short period of time, you know, 3 weeks of actual work leading up. And then we end up with, you know, 30 embryos on one day out of 6 cattle. And they're the best bulls, best donor cows. So we quality begets quality. We're breeding incredibly robust animals that are going to be adapted to Australian conditions. You know, the drug program has maximized what opportunity we have to harvest those embryos. Yeah, and the fertility of the animals, ensuring that we've got productive semen and good follicular waves so that we end up with a good grade one embryos. It's all the pieces of the puzzle, the feed nutrition, the drugs, the expertise of the technicians has all got to feed into the program, I suppose.
And then you would have the option of flushing these cows again in 5 weeks if you chose. That's the general cycle.
So I think that's what we're going to do. The work that we've put in elevating their energy levels and learning, because no Thules have been flushed in Australia for a long time or ever. We had to go through this process and see what we could learn, but we got some fantastic results from a couple and areas for improvement where we used some 1989 semen that obviously is a long time ago. So we might mix up some of the bulls we use. And we've got the luxury of choice, so we can choose a couple of different bulls and really get on, you know, increase their energy levels, and hopefully we can get even more in 5 weeks' time. And that'll set us up really well for the next couple of years.
What's the approximate cost of running an embryo transfer program?
Well, in our thing, I don't think you can afford not to. The value that a Thule is going to bring to any herd, I suppose you've got to start with the productive animals, and the better you manage the whole system, the more embryos you're going to get, it dilutes the cost significantly. And if you work with a good holistic approach, I think you can dilute the cost of those embryos significantly to a point where the benefit way outweighs the cost of implementing the program. On top of the ongoing, and we were discussing over dinner last night, the effect that it has on your herd for the next 8 years. So instead of breeding sub-quality animals that then impact your herd for the next 8 years, the cost of $100 to $200 an embryo now, I don't know why you wouldn't do it.
So you've achieved a lot in 12 months. You must have faced quite a few challenges and barriers.
Sure.
Would you like to share any of those with us and how you've overcome them?
Yeah, so I think it was very tricky finding enough recips to scale up at the rate that we're trying to scale up. So getting recips to put our embryos into. It was challenging just getting my head around, even though I'm an agronomist and an applied science degree and have worked in things, there's still a lot of information to wrap your head around in a short amount of time. But if someone like me that hasn't done this for years, in the first year can have a successful flushing, but that's why it's not me, it's a whole team effort. We couldn't do it without Follotropin, we couldn't do it without Q-mates, we couldn't do it without Udo's expertise, we couldn't do it without the genetic resources and the scientists from CSIRO that originally identified Thule as a significant contributor to the economy. So again, everybody's contributed into the whole project, and that's what we want to do, and why with our crossbreeding program, we partner with all of those studs so that they cross-promote Thules with their breed, and it's a collective approach to lift the bar on the whole beef industry.
And lastly, where do you see the Thule breed in Australia in 10 years' time or so? What is that ultimate vision for the breed?
I'm ever the optimist, but I'm also a realist and understand that it takes time for people to understand and work out whether a breed is good for them, and it's not for everybody. Not everyone's going to be able to afford to buy into the breed, but we leave that up to them. And I think we liken it to this good science. So if the best scientists in the world identified Thule as the priority one impact on the beef industry, and then we're now implementing it, I think it's got the ability to contribute $200 million a year to the beef industry. So CSIRO and Priority One identified as $160 million a year back in 1989. So as an outcross for Brahmins and another alternative for Northern Australia, I'd love to see Tuli bulls. They've been incorporated into tropical composites, but there's so much more opportunity for them to be crossbreeding with Wagyu to make a rangeland Wagyu, to be crossbreeding with Red Angus to make a good big framed, fantastic meat quality coupled with heat and parasite resistance. Yeah, which is why we've selected the 8 different breeds to crossbreed with Tuli to demonstrate firsthand so people can come to the farm and see what they look like. Yeah, so I'm super excited about the future, and I think we've got many more flushings ahead and to get the Tuli numbers to where they rightfully should be.
And on that note, it looks as though Udo's just about finished there, so I think it's time to head out and put some of these embryos into the recips.
Beauty.
If you would like to see some footage of the Tuli embryo transfer process taken on the day, have a look on our Repro 360 YouTube channel. And remember, if you are enjoying our podcast or learning something new, please like, share, and review it so we can keep it going.